Behind every good story is an interesting person. This is Person of Interest with Q102's Jeff Thomas.
Well, today's guest grew up in the Philippines, poor. She started working at the age of 11, and after high school came to this country with a dream of owning her own business. After years of hard work, struggles, and setbacks, Christine, with the support of friends who believed in her, has become a great American success story. And if you don't fall in love with her positive spirit and her warm heart, you will absolutely fall in love with her food. Her restaurant, Christine's Casual Dining, bills itself as a Filipino dining experience like no other. Her story is also like no other. My new friend, Christine, is this week's Person of Interest.
I grew up in this second biggest city of the Philippines called Cebu, but I live in a little village. The city is like 3 hours away from the village. Philippines is over 7,000 islands, so each island has different name, and I'm in the middle part of the region, Cebu, the name of the island.
And you moved here when?
July of 2001.
Did you speak English as well then as you do now?
Very little.
When did you start taking English?
We have English at school, but it's not really serious. Like, we don't really take it seriously because
it's like us taking Spanish here.
It's like that. And I just learned more when I moved here.
What was life like growing up in Cebu?
Very poor, but we live in a small village where we're content. You have cows and chickens, and we don't, we only go to the market once a day to get the fish, and we pretty much live very simple life. I miss about the fruits, a lot of fruits, because my parents had all these fruit trees. We just go get it, and it's not the same here. That's what I really miss the most. My mom would cook 3 times a day, and there's no leftover for the next meal. So she just cooked breakfast, lunch, and dinner. We eat 3 times a day. All of it with rice. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner with rice.
Rice is a part of every meal.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And eating chicken is a treat. We just eat fish most every day. But it's very simple life. We don't have like the technology like we have here. The city is very far. So you have to ride a bus 3 hours away. Hmm. Life there is slow, very slow. The time is slow because there's nothing much to do. I remember when we have our first refrigerator when I was 9 years old, and I was very happy with that. And my parents would have TV when I was 12.
You didn't have a TV until you were 12 years old?
Yes. Yeah. We only have 2 channels because my village has mountain cover. Like where I lived, my parents' house is like covered by mountain, and then mountain at the front, mountain here, and mountain. So we are
So you're surrounded.
Yeah, I was surrounded with mountains. So it's very hard to get the broadcast
the signal.
Signal from the city.
It must have felt isolating, or did you not really notice it at that age?
I didn't notice it. I mean, it was. To me, it's just like, it is what it is.
It's just home.
Yeah, you just live with it. There's not much like games or like on TV like we have here. The kids has all this technology. In our village, you only have 1 basketball court to play and 1 ball to play. And then if you are lucky enough to, your parents has a ball, you have to share it with your neighbors.
Is that a philosophy that everyone shares?
Yes. Philippine community is like when you invite somebody, like it's your birthday, like your neighbors are invited, you get offended if they say no.
So it's understood that everyone in the community is a part of your family.
Yes.
In a way.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So growing up, when 3 out of 3 of your meals a day contain rice in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
with that being the main ingredient, I would imagine you'd have to get very creative in the kitchen.
Yeah, you can make rice with sugar. You can make rice with, make it like with milk. My mom would cook fish in the morning or pork in the afternoon. It's like, it's a we just eat different, like...
you just pair it with different things.
Yeah.
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 Was your mom a good cook?
Yes, she is. Yeah, she's a good cook. She taught me everything.
What dish was your mother best at making? What was one of your favorites? The thing that she did better than anybody else.
I like her pork adobo.
Pork adobo?
Yeah. I like her pork adobo and the pancit. I always look forward to it when I go home.
Tell me, I mean, what is it? What is it like? What does it taste like? What's in it?
Pork adobo, well, the traditional one, is not the same as what I made at the restaurant because when we make it in the Philippines, it's made out of pork belly. And you fried it first and then you saute it. After you cook it and make it crispy, you fried it. Put little sauce to it, make it softer.
Hmm.
And you put like onions, peppers, you put like black beans to it, and then you put it over the rice and it with soy sauce and stuff. So that's what I miss the most.
Is that hard to produce here?
I can produce it here, but it's just like made of pork belly, and some people will be like freaked out if they say like fat on the on the food, like the belly part is very fat.
So there is still, even after it's been fried, there's still quite a bit of fat left over?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. You can actually see it.
Would it be correct to say that bacon is basically pork belly?
It's just sliced thinner? It's just sliced thinner. But like some people freaked out when it's sliced bigger.
When
like,
it's a big, yeah, thick chunk. Big,
yeah, they'd be like, ooh. Like,
that's where they draw the line.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, it's just a bacon.
Right. Did you spend a lot of time cooking with your mother?
Yes, when I was younger and when I moved to the city, I go home once a week and my mom would cook me my favorite ones and then go back to the city to work.
Well, I was going to ask you what brought you to the city and it was to work. Did you work in the food service industry?
No, I worked at the retail industry when I was younger. I graduated at 15 years old in high school. I am the youngest. So,
of how many kids?
Six kids. I'm the baby. And the Filipino culture is the parents would send you to college. No matter how hard it is, most of the parents would try to send all their kids to college. But since it's six of us and I have two siblings that are still in college, I have to wait so my two siblings can finish and then it's my time to go to college. So I asked my mom and my dad if I can go to the city and work while waiting for my two other siblings to finish. So they allowed me, but I'll have to go visit them once a week. So that's how I end up in the city. And I work at the retail industry. It's like a department store where you only have 6 months contract to work.
Really?
Yeah. In my country, like, it's different than here.
So when you get hired, you're not hired necessarily for an indefinite amount of time. There's a time limit. There's a cap on it.
For a certain period of time. Yeah. I think they are trying to avoid the benefits because when you work as temporary, they don't have to pay you like
healthcare,
insurance,
and things like that.
Yeah. The one that work longer have better pay when you work like only 6 months. But you can always reapply until you get the observed you and then you can take the job permanently. But
it's a great way to get cheap labor in your own country.
Yeah, that's true.
So at what point did you decide you wanted to come to America? How did that all come about?
It wasn't planned. I think it was the Lord's plan, actually. I met my husband in the Philippines. He was working as a missionary. His cousin lives in the Philippines. He's originally from Cincinnati. But
your husband is from Cincinnati.
Yes. Yeah. He visited his cousin who happens to wants to live. He lives in the Philippines, who married a Filipino girl. So I met him there and we got engaged after 9 months. And then we got married and he don't want to live in the Philippines. So he said, you have to come with me. And I said, like, what about my family? I have to stay here. I said, well, you're my wife now, so you have to go with me. So,
was this discussed before you got married?
I get, he kind of say something about it, but I didn't take it seriously because I have the impression that he would like it there because his cousin lives there,
and right,
he would like it. So I did not, like, it didn't sink in until we got married.
And when you're in love, you're not really thinking of
correct,
the variables,
yeah,
and you're not looking ahead. Yeah, you're just like, we'll work it out later.
Yeah, later. Like, yeah, you don't think the consequences
right
about it. And my parents was very skeptical because I was young, and she thought that I was just, like, infatuated with him. So they were, like, actually, like, against it when I was told them, and I told them, like, I want to marry him.
How old were you?
I was 19.
Oh, that's you're an adult, but that's still pretty young, right?
Yeah, actually, yeah, I was very young, but he was my first boyfriend, and I guess when you didn't have anything to do, and when your life is just revolved with work and family, and nobody pay attention about you, and then this guy come, and you just, like, give you attention, and you just start falling for that person. And I guess that's what actually happened. And my parents was like, you're very young. I guess you're just upset because you don't, you have to wait to go to college. So no, I'm not upset. Like, I understand. And my mom was actually so against it and said, you're going to be far and he's going to take you to the United States and you don't have family there. She's just, like, scaring me. And I was like, I guess, like, I have to learn from that. I have to live with that. And my mom was not accepting it for a while.
So you knew there were risks involved in marrying a man that you hadn't known that long,
mm-hmm,
and moving to a foreign country.
Yeah.
You had never been to America prior,
yeah,
to that.
Yes.
And you kind of placed faith in God's hand and thinking, listen, if this doesn't work out, I'm going to learn a very valuable lesson the hard way.
Yes.
And that's okay.
Yeah. It was hard because your parents was against the relationship because I guess they were just trying to protect me.
Yeah.
Plus, I'm the baby. So he moved back here and I was in the Philippines after we got married. So I have to wait 2 years. Because I have to process all my paperwork to come here. It's not easy to come here.
Even when you marry an American?
Yes. You have to process all your paperwork. He filed a petition for me to come to move here in the United States. And, you know, the technology in the Philippines is very slow. So that take me about 2 years to get approved to be here. And it's very, very frustrating sometimes.
Was that hard, living apart from him for that long?
It is. At that time, there's no Facebook. So he has to pay like $1 per minute to call me at,
wow,
long distance. And he would call me a certain day because, like, I work. The day is different here. Like, when it's right now, it's 2 a.m.
Yeah. So for anyone who's listening, we're recording this. It's just after 1:00 in the afternoon on a Monday. But in the Philippines, while it's 1:00 in the afternoon here at the time of this taping, it's 2 a.m.
Yeah. So the time is really different. So when he called me, it's morning here and then it's night because I have to get off work. And it has to be scheduled. Like, I'll call you like 9 at night, so be waiting for me.
And you said there was no social media because we're going back to, when was this, the late 90s when this was all happening?
This was in 1999.
Okay.
I guess the difference of the technology here and over here is a bit over there and over here is different.
So you went through this 2-year process of applying for citizenship and going through the bureaucracy and the red tape and all of the steps that you just have to go through.
You go through a lot. Prior to my interview to the immigration, they stripped you out from head to toe. They were asking you, like, what is this, like, scars? I said, that's from my chicken pox when I was 10. And they would,
wow,
like, strip you down, like, make sure that you don't have any diseases, virus. You had to inspect you, everything. They take your blood test, police clearance, FBI, everything.
They run
you don't
background
have, yeah,
checks.
Yes, yes.
Look into your past.
Yes, yeah. You have to live here at least 3 years. Then you can apply your citizenship. That's when you were required to study all these 100 questions because you never know what they're going to ask you. Like, how many stars in the flag? What right. are those means? What are the colors of the flag? What? How many stripes? And you have to study the 100 questions because you never know.
I don't know that most American citizens could successfully pass that test, to be quite honest with you, because a lot of these are social studies questions that we've forgotten over the years.
Yeah, I mean, you have to study.
But I love that that's part of the process, because I think those are things that every American should know.
Yeah.
So you arrive in the U.S., mm-hmm. your first time ever, you had never been here before.
Yes.
That must have been culture shock.
It is. The first thing shocked me is that here, the food-wise... Then the weather, but I arrive in the summertime, whereas the Philippines is hot all year long. And then the food-wise, it's so different. The change of eating rice, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, there is no rice there. You have bread and you have so many choices, like chicken, beef, pork, whatever you can think of. There is there in front of you, but you're looking for the rice. That's what I grew up for 20-something years, and it was just hard. So adjusting that part is very hard.
It's one thing to go to English class. It's a whole different thing to have to apply that in your everyday life.
Yes.
Did you take conversational English when you got here, or did you just learn as you
What I
went
did
along?
Was anything that I can read of, like magazines, newspaper, and as I read it, I speak to it. So my tongue would get used to pronounce it. The pronunciation is the hardest part for me because there are some, you know, like her, here.
Yes.
Or there. It's just hard to.
Sure.
Yeah, those are the hardest.
They sound the same, but they're spelled different and they mean different things.
Correct. Yeah.
That would be tough in any language.
Yeah, those are very tough. But rather than that, I was doing fine just reading anything that I can read and just speak what I read.
So after you got over the initial culture shock of living in the United States, I would think it would be very difficult to start a business where you're still struggling to learn the language.
Mm-hmm.
And opening up a restaurant, I think, is such an act of bravery anyway, because 50% of the restaurants, or maybe even more than that, fail within mm-hmm. the first 5 years. What gave you the confidence that you could do it?
I always wanted this since I was a kid. My mom has a retail store, like a little bit like a storefront in my country. And she always trusts me to run it. She go to the city on the weekend after school. She would want me to run it. And when retail and restaurant is totally different. But I have that in me that I can't. I'm a firm believer of if you put yourself into something, you dream it, and then you put yourself to it. I think you can do it.
The old adage that if you put your mind to something.
Yes, that's the word that I want to use.
That you can do it.
You can do it. I also like a firm believer that you ask the Lord for something, and I know there's three answers. Yes and no and wait. Those are the three answers, and I believe that. And I ask him, like, I want. That's why you have to be careful what you're going to pray for, because the Lord going to give it to you. He's going to give it to you.
Careful what you wish for.
Yeah, be careful what you wish for. And I wanted to have a restaurant because I work at the restaurant industry. After I moved here, I start working at this restaurant, and I really liked what I do. I like to serve. I like to cook. And I learned how to bartend, actually, when I first worked there. And I really love what I do. So I work at Golden Corral. I worked there as a server. I served one of the owner of the restaurant. And he pulled me over and he said, like, I would like to get your number. And I said, like, I don't think that was a good idea for you to get my number.
My husband
would not like that. And he said, no, it's not that. I want you to work for me. I'm opening a restaurant and I really like the way you served us. And I was very pleased. My wife is here and my two kids. So I thought he was by himself. And I said, like, oh, okay. He said, like, we will be opening in May and we would like for you to be part of our team. I said, oh, that's so nice of you. I, yeah, I would give that a consideration. That would be another, you know, experience for me to work at actually serving, not in a buffet, and actually like serving. So that's how I end up working at Cancun restaurant.
Cancun?
Yeah, down in Western Bowl. Yeah, I worked there for 13 years and 16 days.
Wow.
Yeah, I was the first opener there.
You must have really loved it to have stayed there that long.
I really loved what I do. I mean, I like this. It gives me pleasure to, the first thing, like, that's how I learned my English well. Because, like, when you start talking, and that's when you practice more.
When you're conversing with people, when Correct. You're dealing with people, uh-huh. you're talking with them every day.
Yeah, and I really liked what I do. And so for 13 years, I was the only one there that was actually last that long, 13 years. That's when it started. Like, I started wanting my own restaurant, because everybody's like, you should open one restaurant and you would do well at it. And kind of like inspiring about it.
In other words, people thought that you should open up your own place just because you were so well liked and you were such a staple of that neighborhood just from working there for so long.
That yeah.
People thought that a restaurant with your identity would do well here.
Yeah. And I have such a good followers. And working there for like 7 years at that time, I said, talk to my husband. And he said, I don't think you can do it. He's very negative about it. And our relation at that time was on the rocks. Our marriage did not last. We got divorced. It was just hard. So I went through a very hard time. So when we got divorced, I basically like supporting me and my daughter. So I paused my dream. And then one day I was just, I'm getting old. I'm getting old. And, you know, it's now or never. And so I pray about it. And I said, Lord, you remember I asked you before that I wanted to have my own place. And I want to ask you again. And I keep passing this old Pizza Hut every day. And I always look for that number for the Pizza Hut where the Red Christine's right now.
Oh, so what? It was a telephone number?
Or yeah,
it was
a telephone number.
So you're talking about the telephone number on the sign saying that it was for lease?
Yeah, for lease. Oh. And I keep passing by that every day going to Cancun to work. It just keep lingering in my mind. For months, I pass by to that area every day and I look at that number. So I was just like, okay, I'm just going to call this number and see what if they let me see it inside, because it's probably closed for like years. So I met the guy, and the Pizza Hut was like really, really old inside. It's like spider webs all over, and I see potentials on it. It needs a lot of work. There's no kitchen equipment. The only thing that was left there was the old booth, like it's like a divider for the whole thing. And I was like, I don't know if I can do it. And then my friends was like, Christine, you can do this. We will help you. Like, I have a lot of friends that are actually willing to help me and would want me to succeed. So the guy from Pennsylvania said, you know what? If you really like this place, we will give you 6 months free rent.
Wow.
Yeah, we will give you 6 months free rent to get this ready. I said, okay. So signed a contract and all that. So I go to the auction and buy all these like used equipments. So a friend of mine would help me. He was like, okay, I help you pick up. I have a truck, so I just pick up a little bit a week time. So, and I said like, well, I would like to have a bar. I said, Christine, we'll help you build. His name is Mike. He said, I help you build a bar. So we go to Depot and then we got all these woods, and he was a contractor, so he built everything. So he would teach me. I don't know about stuff, how to build stuff. So I said, I will teach you how to do this, and we paint, and he'll teach me how to, we paint up the restaurant, and then I bought some old tables. And he said, I will teach you how to refinish these tables. I will just kind of soften it, and then you paint it over it.
So he would sand it.
Yeah, he would sand it.
And you would paint over it.
Yeah, paint over it.
And I love that, first of all, I mean, it had to have been overwhelming, the generosity of these friends of yours who were helping you get this place ready.
Yeah.
But they're not just doing these things for you. They're showing you how to do for yourself.
Yes. And he was willing to help me what I needed, because he was a best friend of mine that would actually help you. He really has a true belief in me that I can do it. All he has to do is show how it's done a little bit, especially like sanding.
Yeah.
The hardest part, like sanding the table.
Right.
And bought some chairs, you know, used chairs.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have a lot of money to start. I just went through a divorce 2 years after, you know, I decided to have a restaurant, and money was very hard. So I have to go everything from the used equipments and work from there.
Yeah.
And I have my mom. I call my mom. I met her at Cancun. Her name is Betty. She's like my mother. She's been encouraging me to not back out on this one. You went too far. So I...
don't quit now.
Yeah, don't quit. So, you know, there is a moment that you really think it's hard. Things are not go your way. And then my mom is just, don't quit. I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to do it. Then Michael would be like, I'll show you how to get this done. Like in the morning, I go clean the restaurant or do something at the restaurant. Then at night, I work at Cancun. Then come back every day for 6 months. And I'm almost there. I'm almost there. And then I realized they called me, my dad has cancer. So I was very upset. My dad is very close to me. He taught me a lot about work ethics. He taught me about life. Do not get discouraged or something come up. Just wait, and the Lord has a way for it. And then he has stage 4 cancer, so I have to go home and see him. I usually go home every 3 years to see my family when I moved here. And then I went back home. Money was tight at that time, and I have to see my dad. I really have to see him because he's dying. So I talked to my boss and said, I have to go home. He said, yeah, I understand. So I went home for a month and spent time with my dad. And, you know, I guess when you're selfish, you try to save your dad. Like, I talked to doctors if there's an option, and there's no option, he's going to lose this battle. So I spent a lot of stuff for medication, because in my country, there's no insurance. So you have to go take care of yourself, do your own. So when my dad suffered pain, he has liver cancer. So I buy all these medications and what we need just for him to be comfortable. So then I came back after 1 month. I came back and I hold the restaurant. I hold that dream. I was discouraged. So I literally stop doing what I do at that place. And I already put up the sign, St. Christine's Casual Dining. So I put up the sign, and everybody was asking this group of Facebook groups, like, do you know what's going on at that place, Christine's? It's been sitting there and nobody's, like, somebody's working there, and it's just suddenly stopped.
So after being gone a month,
mm-hmm.
and you literally put the restaurant plans on hold.
Yes.
You just basically said, I don't have the money right now, and I've got other expenses, and I can't financially pull this off.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, the sign had gone up.
Yeah, the Christine sign.
It was already up?
It's already up.
So everybody in the neighborhood is wondering, when is this place going to open?
Yes. When is this place going to open? And some people that know, like, oh, Christine is going to open that. She works at Cancun. And some people would come to the restaurant like, hey, when is your restaurant going to open? I was like, I don't know. I'm really in this situation right now where my dad is sick, and he's most important. Family is most important than other things. So he said, do you need help? I said, no, I think I should be fine. I just needed to postpone my dreams because I have to take care of my dad.
And so, what kind of help were they offering?
Like paint, or I need financial. I just
really like, anything you needed.
Yeah,
at
anything
that point.
I need, and I just don't want to like bother people.
You don't want to impose on people.
Yeah, I don't want to like bug people. I just want to make sure that I will be okay. Because what if I have so many what if questions, like what if the restaurant cannot make it, and then I would be going through all this stuff. So
you were afraid of disappointing people.
Correct. Then my dad passed away. I literally discouraged, like, I don't know if I'm going to open this. So my mom in the United States, the one I told you, her name is Betty. She said, Christine, you went too far. You went too far. You can't back out now. Your sign is there. You have to pursue this. You have to pursue this dream. You can't just keep discouraging because your dad passed away. That's part of life. Just accept that he's in heaven. He's not suffering anymore. He's in a better place. Keep moving forward. So then Mike was like, let's go. You put the date for your opening. And I said, I don't know if I can. She said, if you don't put the date, you would never going to open this place. And I said, like, I don't know. I'm really scared now. Like, it starts sinking in. Like,
yeah, this is getting real.
Yeah, it is getting real. So,
and did you even have a menu planned at this point?
Yeah, I have a menu right down. And
so you had an idea of what Christine's casual dining mm-hmm. would be.
Yeah, I have the idea of the menu. So I want to keep it simple. I really want to keep it simple. And I said, well, you have to hire a chef. You know, you can't cook it all. I said, like, yeah, I forgot about that part. And I mean, my first.
Oh, yeah. Chef.
Yeah, like, you have to get a chef and you have to put this menu together. So I talked to a friend of mine, Austin, like, Christine, I work at this restaurant industry. I can make you the menu and I just put whatever you want in there. We may help you put the menu together. So he take care of that part. But the main thing is the chef, getting a chef. And I met the guy, and it's like, well, I can help you how to present the food, how to put it together, and what is your specialty? And I said, okay, this is my specialty. And I said, just keep it simple for now because I don't want you to get overwhelmed.
Yeah.
So I put the date, May 18th of 2015, as a soft opening. So I invited my friends, my family here, like, American
your
family.
Your American family.
The one that really close to me and invited. And I said, yeah, you can invite your friend. Oh, boy. And it's not a soft opening. They came in full force.
Oh, wow.
To support me. And I said, oh, my God. Like,
you were overwhelmed.
Yeah, I was. The kitchen was overwhelmed. And I was overwhelmed. I was really scared. Yeah. I was really scared. I said, oh, it's okay. We're here to support you. I have 2 days opening, May 18th and May 19th. And people came, the one that I invited, and they bring their family to support me in my 2 days of soft opening. And that helps me a little bit financially. And then like my grand opening. And the thing about when you open up a restaurant, it's like a learning process every day. You know, I was so overwhelmed. My first 6 months from being open was a chaos, because when I was working at Cancun, all I do was wait tables and bartend. Now, having a restaurant, you do it all. I do inventory. I do the ordering. I do the payroll. I do the bartending. I still do bartending nowadays. I'm there every day. If you don't see me at the restaurant, I go somewhere and pick up some stuff what I needed for the restaurant.
If you're not at the restaurant, you're doing something for the restaurant.
Yeah, for the restaurant. Yeah. And it was a learning process for me. I just took it from there and switched the menu, because you know, when you first open, people, you got to put that first impression to the customers. And I did not have that first impression with them because it was a rush opening.
You feel like you struggled in the beginning because you weren't ready?
Yeah, I wasn't ready. I was struggling. And then I get all these bad reviews and people didn't like it. And I was so frustrated.
Yeah.
Sometimes I would go to the fridge and cry. Like, I said, I did not know it was this hard. You know, those are the trials to be in the restaurant business. Yeah. That you're going to get punched. Mm-hmm. And then you just recover from that and change the menu. I changed the menu one time. I have to tell you, I fired everybody in the kitchen at that time.
Really?
I think it was 9 months from the opening. It's just so chaos. It's just they don't listen. I mean, she doesn't listen. Oh, Christine doesn't listen. I'm not going to listen to you. This is my place. This is my way. I fired everyone in the kitchen.
So managing people was difficult, I imagine, because you had a lot of people, you know, a lot of cooks in the kitchen, as they say, that were trying to tell you how to run your business.
Yes, yes. Plus, they would like try to dictate you and stuff. So I just like, you know what? I'm really tired.
Mm.
So I fired everyone in the kitchen. And for one day, a half a day, I closed. It was a Taco Tuesday too, and I fired everybody in the kitchen, and my daughter's like, "Mom, what did you just did?" I said, "Like, it's my way or the highway. I mean, they're not our menu is. I mean, the people are not pleased with our food, so I got to do something drastic." So I fired everyone in the kitchen, and then half a day, the next day of Wednesday, I opened the place and I cooked.
Really?
I cooked everything. So
And you ran it yourself?
Me and Michael, and my daughter was at the front. She was helping me. She was said, take care of the front, take care of the customer. I got to cook. I cooked for 2 weeks for everybody, and Mike was the expediter of the food. And then I got Mike's sister cut the vegetables and all that.
What I needed.
Yeah, do prep, and I do the cooking for 2 weeks until I find the right person to run the kitchen, because they're not going to dictate me how I run the place.
What were people trying to dictate to you? Were they trying to dictate what to put on the menu or how to prepare it?
Yeah, how to prepare. Because I have a book to follow. Like, I write down what the ingredients would be, and
they were trying to change it?
Yeah, they tried to change it. And I taste every day. I go and taste the food and make sure that it's the same every day.
Like, consistent.
The flavor, yeah, being consistent. And it's not there.
You can tell when they're not doing it right.
Yes, yes. I'm very specific when it comes to that part. And then I would question them, like, why is it taste different than last week? And then he said, like, oh, I don't know. I just probably forgot to put peppers or whatever, onions. And I said, no, it's not going to. You have to go by the book. This is what it's going to be.
And there's a process to these things. You can't put the cart before the horse.
Yes.
This recipe, it's not just a list of ingredients. You probably had a whole method to how it had to be prepared and the timing and everything else, right?
Yeah. Yes. And they're not listening. And I said, like, and they would laugh at me. And then I walk out, and it was just, one day I just.
That's it.
So after that, I cooked for 2 weeks and I changed the menu. I just literally changed it and trained everyone that comes in that door how to prep the way I want it and the quality. And that's how the restaurant went up from, it tripled the sales.
Really? And how long? So how long after you opened the place did you fire everyone?
9 months.
9 months.
Yeah.
You fire everybody. And how long did it take for you to get back on your footing and see sales go up like
that? 6 months.
Right. So it was another six months after that.
6 months. There was
so this is a good, you know, year and 3 months, 4 months, almost a year and a half.
Yeah.
Turmoil where
it had to have been really difficult. Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, you're still trying to get customers in the door, and heaven forbid if they have a bad experience, it's going to be awfully tough to get them back in there, right?
Yes. I have this lady that comes to the restaurant a lot, and her daughter was writing an article. She wrote an article about the restaurant at that time. Her name is Andrea, but her mother comes to the restaurant, and one day I was on Facebook and she tagged me to what she wrote about the restaurant. And I said, like, wow, like, I did not know about that somebody is writing an article about me. So it went viral.
Mm.
And the one that's actually like had a bad experience way back from the past for us, they came back and they said they loved it. You know, it said, you made a very good change that for the good for the restaurant. And ever since then, our sales triple. And our customers that keep coming back all the time because it's been consistently the same flavor every day. And since I changed the crew in the kitchen and everything.
What inspires you to keep doing it every day? It's such hard work.
Yes.
But you seem to love it despite all of the obstacles and the challenges. Having to fire everyone and start from scratch again and the sleepless nights and working every single day and the blood and the sweat and the tears that go into it.
It inspires me to make people happy. And I don't know, it's just, I really love what I do. And seeing people that comes to the restaurant and eat and they have a wonderful meal, a home-cooked meal, what really inspires me. I don't have a family here. And I see people come to the restaurant and have family and I can serve them a good meal, really great meal, like home-cooked meal. That really what makes my day.
Mm.
I mean, you know, every day, I don't have the vegetable delivered to the restaurant. I go and pick it up.
You pick out your own vegetables.
I pick up my own vegetables. I pick up the milk, the bread twice a week to make sure that it's fresh. Because I used to have like a deliver everything. I didn't like that part because I want to see it. Like, especially the vegetables. I want to see it before I bring it to the restaurant. Because the hassle of having it deliver, and then what if you get a mushy tomatoes? And that really, like, it's a hassle because you're going to call your sales rep and said, hey, I got a mushy tomato. The hassle of putting it on the side and wait for them to pick it up and get your refund.
Yeah,
I'd rather have to go once a week and pick up my tomatoes, my lettuce.
That way you know it's good.
I know it's good and it's fresh. And it's every Monday I go and pick it up. For the whole week that I needed peppers.
You're the quality control.
Yes. Every day I have something to do because it's a schedule. Monday, vegetable day. Tuesday, the milk. Wednesday, the bread. Then another. It's just a schedule for me.
Let's talk about Christine's casual dining.
Yeah.
I've never been.
We should.
The people who are listening right now that have never been, what's on the menu at Christine's casual dining?
We have a very diverse menu. I have Filipino food, Wisconsin pancit, pork adobo, pork barbecue, the egg rolls. Those are the basic. And we have Filipino soup.
Is this a lunch place? Do I come for lunch?
Yes.
Or do I come for dinner? Do I come for breakfast or not?
You can do brunch.
Really?
Breakfast every day.
What time do you open?
We open at 11. The brunch is over to 2:30. We have lunch specials, $5.99 every day. And then we have happy hour 3 to 6. And then dinner, we have home cooked meal. We have pot roast, meatloaf. We have Mexican dish. We have burritos, fajitas.
So you picked up a lot from Cancun that you learned.
I picked up like a few things that there is one of my favorite dish over there that I just twisted a little bit. I have a couple Italian. We have ravioli and spaghetti meatballs. But what we are known for is the pot roast and the meatloaf. And I just added the Filipino dish in there like a few months ago because people were like, you should start doing the Filipino dish a little bit to introduce it to the community. And I did that and they loved it. And I have a plate where you can have a little bit of everything. Like you get the whole experience of the Filipino dish in just one plate.
Are you open 7 days a week?
Mm-hmm. And last year I did, since I don't have family, I had asked my crew at the kitchen and the servers to do a voluntary for the holidays. Like, you know, you are in the customer service industry and I just want to cook Thanksgiving meal to the ones that don't have family to go. So I asked the crew in the kitchen to help me to put this together on a Thanksgiving meal for the ones that doesn't have family. So I cooked the whole entire meal. All they do is to cut the turkey, to put it in the plate. And I have my daughter volunteer, and I have one server that volunteered that day and me, and then two cooks that volunteered. Yeah, I do that. So all they do is put up the plate as a Thanksgiving, and it went so well. And everybody would think like, oh, she's open things. She never asked anybody to take off. I said, it's not that. My point is I'm asking the employees to volunteer. I'm not forcing them to work. I just want to have some family that don't have a place to go and have a wonderful meal. And it gives me pleasure. Like,
it feels good.
Yeah, it feels good to see them. They have a really great meal and spend time with their family at the restaurant. And they're like my family too. So it's kind of kill two birds in one stone.
How old is your daughter? Is she working at the restaurant with you?
She helps me on a weekend. She's 16. Yeah. She goes to Walnut Hills. She's been there with me. I remember when she was 12 when I started the restaurant, and she would do her homework, and I was painting the restaurant, and she was just, and I said, Mom, can I paint my doll too? I was like, oh, okay, you can paint your doll. I mean, she's a doll. She's a good kid, really great kid. She play at the Walnut Hills marching band. She plays snare drums at Walnut Hills, and then she play softball as a catcher during the springtime. So she's doing her thing.
So looking ahead in the future, what do you see for yourself?
I see for myself is I just want to. To me, it's not about just work every day. I don't feel it. Like, when I'm at the restaurant, it's the vibe that I see. Because I miss my family, of course. It's just, I just want to work. That's all I want. Like, to
see
people.
In other words, you love what you do so much.
Yeah,
You just want to keep on doing what you're doing? Am I hearing this?
Yes, I just want to keep doing what I do. And it's a pleasure. I can't explain it. It's just...
You love what you do.
Yeah, I do.
It brings you joy.
Yes. Yeah. And coming to the restaurant, and you might see, like, you know, differences sometimes in, you know, people you can't please. And that's normal. You can't please. Sometimes I beat myself to it because, like, she's not happy and I want to make her happy. And it's just, you know, I would do everything possible. I know how to please a customer, to make sure that she has a wonderful meal or wonderful experience at the restaurant. And if I can't, sometimes it beat me. It makes me sad. But, you know, and then my mom would say, like, you can't. There's no way you can't please everybody. Just continue what you do. My employee would ask me, like, I don't know how you do it, Christine. It's just... You just go on and on and on and on. A couple days ago, I was at the Asian Food Fest. I was there. It's my first year doing it.
The first Asian Food Fest.
Yeah, my first Asian Food Fest. And I was so nervous. And once I got to the groove to it, I really liked it. People was like, oh, we're going to try your egg rolls. And like, it's just the joy of seeing people like the food, like what I cooked. I mean, it gives me pleasure. I've been so blessed this year. And I'm so grateful to the Lord about it, and to the people that actually have believe in me, like, you know, like that I can do it. And people in the community supported me. And when I'm there, I go around the table and talk to them, and people probably call me crazy or workaholic or something, but it really does give me pleasure to do it.
I'm so glad I had a chance to meet you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you for coming in, and thank you for having this conversation with me.
Oh,
and
thank you.
I love your story, and I find it incredibly inspiring.
Thank you.
It makes a difference to someone to know that that brings you joy and that you love what you do.
Yeah, I do. I really do.
Thank you for coming on
Person of
Interest. I'll be visiting you soon.
Oh, hopefully.
And by the way, if you would like to visit Christine and experience the food so many tri-staters are raving about, Christine's Casual Dining is at 5770 Harrison Avenue in Dent. That's 5770 Harrison Avenue in Dent. And you'll also find her online at christinescasualdining.com. That's going to do it for this edition of Person of Interest. Person of Interest is produced by Natalie Jones. And if you found Christine as inspiring and compelling as we did, or if you'd like to suggest a future Person of Interest, send us an email to poi@wkrq.com. Until next time, for Person of Interest, I'm Jeff Thomas. Thanks for listening.
These are the people behind the stories that matter to you. Thanks for listening to Q102's Person of Interest with Jeff Thomas.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Did you know that the bold, smooth taste of Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed in your Keurig coffee maker and enjoyed at home? Dunkin's cold K-Cup pods were crafted to be brewed hot and enjoyed cold. And of course, they're packed with the Dunkin' flavor you crave. Brew over ice and sip in seconds. Because the home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
The legend of Cayman Jack is just around the corner. With blue agave nectar, real lime juice, and cane sugar. Discover legendary taste with America's number one margarita. Premium flavored malt beverage. Please drink responsibly. All registered trademarks used under license by American Vintage Beverage Company, Chicago, Illinois.